Their actions are quickly closing off the possibility of a diplomatic solution.
Calls for force and restraint on North Korea. It's Friday, July 7th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China's role on North Korea remains open. Afghan teens still seeking U.S. entry. War reporting in Myanmar, hitting the panic button, and a web of movie thrills. It all starts right now on VOA Asia. A day after the United States announced it is prepared to use force, China's foreign ministry called on all relevant parties in the North Korean dispute to stay calm, exercise restraint, and refrain from words and deeds that might heighten tensions. A spokesman also said China has fully implemented UN sanctions against North Korea. U.S.-UN Ambassador Nikki Haley on Wednesday warned the North's test of an intercontinental ballistic missile on Tuesday could force the U.S. to resort to military action to halt its nuclear and missile programs. Still, Haley told the Security Council the U.S. preferred diplomacy.
And then you also had in Korea, U.S. Forces Commander and Combined Forces Commander, United Nations Commander, Vincent Brooks, cautioned that there was certainly the option for war and that it was a matter of restraint at this point unless ordered to take different action. So that signals to North Korea, along with the live fire exercises by South Korea and U.S. forces, that there is a very serious response at play.
Ambassador Haley said the international community can cut off the major sources of hard currency to the North Korean regime. We can restrict the flow of oil to their military and their weapons programs. We can increase air and maritime restrictions. We can hold senior regime officials accountable, referencing proposed new UN sanctions. Why aren't these already in place?
They've been partially in place, but not to the extent of what she's speaking. Really, what it is a step up, in particular with China in mind, because of the extension to secondary sanctions. And we saw a move in this direction the other day with the cutoff of the Bank of Dandong. But clearly, in light of North Korea's July 4th launch, there'll be a push to have China either do more or pay a price relative to trade and enhanced sanctions. That could lead to a confrontation between China and the United States. But balancing that is the task at hand, to try to get China to do more and at the same time to try to not endanger the relationship with China. That said, I think it's fair to say that the Trump administration has realized that they shouldn't put all the eggs in the China basket and that China indeed has some limited aspects to its ability to rein in North Korea.
What is your assessment? I've not really spoken with you since the test launch of this latest missile. Is this an ICBM that is really backing the U.S. into a corner with very few options?
Partially, and I think we need to be careful not to overreact here, because what this is a two-stage rocket, and the second stage only traveled for a very brief period of time. Clearly, they have a ways to go before they can deliver a warhead, despite their statements, some of which are probably grandiose as well as bellicose. And so we need to remember that while they're rapidly developing, and that should be a paramount concern, we also have to be careful not to overreact, not to play into the North Korean propaganda machine.
Stephen Norper, senior director of the Korea Society and a Columbia University professor, speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty on Nikki Haley's statement, which struck a new and sober tone relative to the perceived North Korean threat to the United States. At the United Nations, Haley indicated the U.S. would soon propose new U.N. sanctions against North Korea, including cutting off all sources of hard currency to Pyongyang, restrict the flow of oil imports, increase air and maritime restrictions, and hold senior regime officials accountable. The U.S. diplomat singled out China, Pyongyang's chief trading partner, as the country on which strict enforcement of existing U.N. sanctions rests. Stephen Norper said the U.S. should find a way to get North Korea back to the negotiating table and seek either a freeze or a moratorium on both its nuclear and missile programs. He said the North could have used the weapons it already has, but has chosen not to. Norper suggested ways to avoid miscalculation, which may include reopening a communication link with Pyongyang in New York and reactivating the hotline between the two Koreas. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Philippine quake knocks down building, kills two, injures 100. The United States and others look to China to help increase pressure on North Korea. Watchdog blames Bangladesh agencies for many disappearances. Hong Kong seizes $9 million worth of ivory in Malaysia shipment. Police investigate Indonesian president's son for blasphemy. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, be sure to stop by our VOAnews.com website. As VOA Asia continues, we continue our look at North Korea and some of the many facets that are involving the current situation. The United States is calling for a tough response to North Korea's launch this week of an intercontinental ballistic missile. One key country Washington and others are looking for help is from China, especially as the United States seeks to draw up new and tighter sanctions. North Korea is expected to be a key topic as Chinese leader Xi Jinping and U.S. President Donald Trump host talks on the sidelines of this week's Group of 20 summit that's being held in Hamburg, Germany. Japan, South Korea, and the United States are also scheduled to hold trilateral talks on North Korea during the summit later today and on Saturday. China is North Korea's biggest ally and trading partner. Over the first quarter of this year, China saw its trade with North Korea grow by nearly 40%. At the same time, however, Beijing has begun implementing new sanctions on North Korean coal that were passed late last year. In February, Beijing banned the import of coal for the rest of the year, and according to statistics released in April, those imports to China dropped by almost 52% compared with the same period last year. The export of forced labor is a key conduit through which North Korea obtains funds from overseas. The issue was highlighted recently when Secretary of State Rex Tillerson unveiled a new report on human trafficking. In the ranking released late last month, China was listed among the world's worst human trafficking offenders. In comments, Tillerson accused Russia and China of, in effect, paying for North Korea for slave labor. Still, some are skeptical that sanctions can stop North Korea. Richard Bitzinger, a senior fellow at Singapore's S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, said sanctions may make the West feel good, but are not likely to change North Korea's behavior because they do not impact the elite.
Kim and his, you know, that top 1% of the North Korean hierarchy, you know, they have ways in order to get around sanctions to make sure that they stay in a comfortable lifestyle. I think we're past the point where the North Koreans are going to give up their nuclear weapons or their missile system.
Others argue that there are chokeholds that could better be used to dismantle and disrupt North Korea's illicit overseas financing and procurements for its weapons programs. They also note that North Korea's sanctions pale in comparison to what was used to help broker a deal with Iran. So far, China has expressed its condemnation of the launch, along with other countries, calling it a flagrant violation of UN resolutions. China has not, however, said anything definitive regarding sanctions. U.S. officials have indicated that restrictions on the flow of oil and other energy supplies to Pyongyang's military and weapons programs tightened controls over air and maritime traffic to North Korea, and further moves to hold senior officials of the Kim Jong-un regime responsible are among the new sanctions under consideration. In a report titled Risky Business, the Center for Advanced Defense Studies argues that while North Korea uses a wide range of networks to skirt international programs and continue its pursuit of nuclear weapons, the system is centralized, limited, and vulnerable. The report argues that the disruption of key facilitators could greatly increase pressure on Kim Jong-un to return to the negotiating table. Our thanks to VOA's Bill Ide in Beijing for sharing this story with us. Happening now in Asia, Human Rights Watch has blamed the Bangladesh government for secret detentions and disappearances of opposition figures since 2013. The report said at least 90 people were detained last year. 21 detainees were later killed. The whereabouts of 9 others, unknown. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for joining us. A team of Afghan teenage girls who were denied a visa to participate in a robotics contest in Washington say they will not be deterred and have sent their homemade robot to the contest. The girls from the western province of Herat twice made the dangerous journey to the U.S. Embassy in Kabul to apply for visas, but they were turned down for reasons the State Department has not disclosed because of its policy of not to discuss specific visa denials. While disappointed, the girls are glad their robot will be a part of the competition. Bezan Hamrod narrates this report by Khalil Nurzai and Mohammed Ahmadi of VOA's Afghan service.
The six teenage girls are members of the first Afghan robotics team. They were chosen from talented girls from 10 schools in western Herat province to participate in the coming Global Challenge Robotics Contest in Washington. Although they were denied visas to come to the United States, the team members proudly sent their entry, a ball-sorting robot, to the competition.
Our robot is a color recognizer and ball collector, and the more balls it collects, it scores higher. And we're happy that Afghanistan will participate in the contest.
Lida, another team member, says they remain motivated.
Once we were denied, we became upset, but we kept working, and after we returned to Herat from Kabul, we got training and constructed our robot to send to the U.S. to prove to the world that Afghan girls can do it, and Afghan girls can develop their talents across the world.
We have not been deterred. We kept constructing our robot and sent it via Federal Express to the contest.
The visa denial was widely reported in the United States and even prompted former presidential contender, Senator Bernie Sanders, to post a Facebook appeal urging the State Department to reconsider. The girls reportedly will be able to watch their ball-sorting robot compete via a video link. For producer Khalil Nurzai and Mohammed Ahmadi, I am Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
And we wish them all the best of luck in the competition. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the health of China's lone Nobel laureate, dissident Liu Xiaobo, has dramatically deteriorated, according to the hospital treating him for liver cancer in Shenyang, China. While China released Liu from prison to seek medical care, authorities have denied him permission to search for better treatment elsewhere. You'll find the day's big stories and great features on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. After militants from Myanmar's persecuted Rohingya Muslim minority launched deadly attacks on border guard posts in October, several journalists sped to Mungdao in northern Rakhine State to cover the military operation that followed. But they soon discovered they would be allowed to document little. Wearing a flak jacket and helmet, Kong Tet, a 34-year-old director of photography at the Myanmar Times, arrived at a roadblock with colleagues and was told to head back for security reasons.
The problem is like you can't expect the permission from the authorities, from the government authorities, with police or soldiers. It's almost impossible. We told them, we explained them that like that's our profession. We know all the risk, but they insist they can't let us in.
In addition to obvious safety concerns, Myanmar's war reporters deal with several obstacles in covering the numerous conflicts that have flared up over the decades since independence in 1948. These include a lack of access to conflict zones, concerns about what content publications are permitted to publish, language barriers and trust issues between reporters and ethnic armed groups, and the military's reluctance to let the media document crackdowns that have led to allegations of human rights abuses. There are also emerging legal issues. Myanmar's transition from military rule in 2011 led to the election of Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party 4 years later. In 2015, the military warned the media not to broadcast statements made by another rebel group, the Myanmar National Democratic Alliance Army, or they would, quote, face action under the law. In 2014, journalist Kopar Ghee was covering clashes in Mon State when he was detained and killed while in military custody. Fighting surged since the breakdown of a ceasefire between the military and one of the more powerful ethnic armed groups, the Kachin Independence Army, in 2011. As clashes increase, access diminishes. David Balk, a Myanmar specialist for the NGO Fortify Rights.
What we've seen in recent years in Myanmar is growing set of restrictions on human rights monitors, on journalists, on international and national humanitarian actors trying to provide assistance to people affected by the conflict. And it appears to be getting worse. And it means that, that when you try to get information from these areas, you're doing so at enormous personal risk.
Months after the October attacks in Rakhine State, the government has, with rare exceptions, made the northern part of the state a no-go region for the media. And last month it said it would deny visas to UN investigators probing allegations of crimes against humanity that surfaced with the military operation. In theory, the abolishing of censorship in 2012 and the passage of a media law that guarantees rights to report on conflict without detention should mean that local journalists are able to report on Myanmar's civil wars without fear of being accused of aiding insurgents. But, as many cases show, that reality is different. Late last month, three journalists were arrested after attending a drug-burning ceremony in northern Shan State held by the Tang National Liberation Army. They were charged under the Unlawful Associations Act, which has been used by the military to cut off support for rebels as a way of scaring off media organizations that operated in exile before being welcomed back into the country as part of the democratic transition. The three journalists could get 3 years if convicted. Our thanks to Joe Freeman in Yangon for sending us this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi's historic visit to Israel ended in unusually intimate circumstances. A stroll on the beach with Israeli counterpart Benjamin Netanyahu. Twitter users have been sharing the photos of these two on the beach, commenting on everything from Netanyahu's hidden ankles to a budding bromance between the two politicians. While you're online, visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, panic buttons used by the elderly in their homes when they need help from the police or medical personnel can be the difference between life and death. Now a new bracelet fitted with a mobile phone and GPS tracking device could replace panic buttons, and not just for seniors. VOA's Deborah Block tells us about this technological advance that can be a lifeline for anyone who needs help in a hurry.
It could be mistaken for a piece of jewelry, but the Highlight bracelet is much more. With the built-in mobile phone and GPS system that doesn't need a base station. The Swedish inventor, Hanna Paulsen, says the silicone bracelet is activated through her newly patented panic grip.
It turns red, and then it means it's calling seven different pre-programmed telephone numbers of your own choice. And when someone answers on the other side, it turns green. And then you know someone answered, and that help is on the way.
The device delivers both phone and text messages.
Get a text message with a GPS position of where you are. And also it activates the microphone and speaker that's integrated into the bracelet. So the person on the other side can hear everything around the bracelet and you can talk directly. So it's on speakerphone.
Another advantage, she says, is that the panic grip makes it more difficult for users to mistakenly activate the alarm.
Today's safety alarm has just one button that you press. 80% of all alarms are false. So I made another grip, so it's simpler to do, even if you were having problem gripping. And it's two buttons you have to press in instead of one. So then you don't accidentally press it in.
The bracelet could be useful to more than just the elderly.
Such as witness protection, crime prevention, kindergarten groups, people who work in extreme environments, like in forests.
With her startup, she hopes to begin marketing the bracelet next year. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Usually around this time of year, you begin seeing a lot of superheroes in the movie theaters, and this year's no exception. We now have a new treatment of the Marvel Comics superhero Spider-Man opening in U.S. theaters. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, Spider-Man Homecoming has the teenaged Peter Parker battling villains and his own angst.
We last saw Tom Holland as Peter Parker, a.k.a. Spider-Man, in Captain America: Civil War. Peter got to meet and fight alongside his hero Tony Stark, or Iron Man, in an epic battle in the 2016 blockbuster. But now the fight is over and Peter has to return to high school. He is, after all, just a teenager. Peter really wants to be an Avenger and to impress Tony Stark. But when a villain who is selling alien technology left over from the battle between the Avengers and the Chitauri in 2012's The Avengers emerges, Peter finds that he has to deal with that problem on his own. Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige says Spider-Man Homecoming shows the geeky, fun-loving side of a kid who's made into a superhero.
It's the first full Spider-Man film that takes place in high school. And he's got other high school friends. And for the very first time, somebody learns a secret. And he's got a best friend who's, he's not sure he can keep his mouth shut, but his friend Ned has learned his secret early on in the film, and suddenly you have an entirely new dynamic for Spider-Man.
Tom Holland, the 21-year-old actor who plays Spider-Man, says that this is a very different take on the friendly neighborhood web spinner, a youthful side not present in other Marvel Comic Universe heroes.
We've seen the soldier, we've seen the billionaire, we've seen the God, and now it's time to see the kid, you know? And I think it's fun to see what would happen if you gave a 15-year-old superpowers. And I think what would happen is he'd have a pretty great time.
Director John Watts says this film has Peter Parker battling the awkwardness that every teenager faces, and that is sure to make it popular with audiences.
In the movie, he's been given this amazing opportunity by Tony Stark, and he's just trying really hard to prove himself so that he can become an Avenger and not screw up. And that's exactly how I feel at every moment making this movie. So I think there's this universal idea behind Peter Parker just being a regular kid that you can always relate to.
Michael Keaton stars as Spider-Man's nemesis Vulture, or Adrian Toomes. He's an embittered salvage contractor who takes the alien tech and starts his own weapons company to rival Tony Stark. Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige says that Spider-Man has been introduced into the Marvel Comic Universe movies, and now some of his villains, like Vulture, can also come in.
We've made 15 movies now set within the same shared continuity of universe, and now that we've introduced Spider-Man to it, we can introduce some of his villains. And what is it like to grow up in that world? What is it like to be in a world where you can look over your head and Iron Man flies by, or aliens pour out of the city and the Avengers come and attack them? It would be scary. It would be exciting. Certainly for Peter, he got to spend some time with the Avengers. We saw him in Civil War, had a pretty amazing summer vacation. Now he has to go back to high school after hanging out with these rock stars. What's that like? That's his journey.
Spider-Man Homecoming also stars Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, Iron Man, and Marissa Tomei as Peter Parker's Aunt May. Gwyneth Paltrow returns as Pepper Potts, and Jon Favreau is back as Happy Hogan. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, whether you're still in school or you've been out for a while, I think we can all think back to someone in school who held a few secrets and decided to share them with friends. You can share whatever's on your mind with us by writing to us at VOA Asia Facebook. Our email is voaasia@voanews.com. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. And you can find our program on many different sources, iTunes and SoundCloud for one, and also on our website at voanews.com. We'd like to say hello to everyone listening in Myanmar via Facebook on VOA Burmese. Thank you so much for joining us today. And as always, a thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Aydin Utku, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.